keep me warm. Linoleum knife. Hello.
Hello.
I don't think we even need to say what that was. That was great.
Yes.
It's not storming.
No, but, you know, Christmas music started Friday on the coast.
At us the
yes,
other day.
It has been crazily warm.
There was a heat storm going on in Los Angeles earlier this week. That was not good.
No.
But now it's back to reasonably normal, like for November. It's cool outside.
Mm. I have not been doing it, but I've read on Facebook people in L.A. complaining about how hot it was, and then people in other parts of the country saying, hey, people in L.A., shut up. So I didn't say anything. I'm glad I didn't.
You know what? No. I won't shut up. Here's why. I didn't ask to be taken to this city to live.
Oh, this again?
You dragged me here. Everywhere I've been, more or less, in my life has been dictated by birth, my parents, where I found a job, and where my husband took me to.
Poor you.
I have not had any autonomy in my own living situation. And so, anyway, I've lived in the South most of my life, with the exception of the first dozen or so years.
Right.
I've lived in the South or Los Angeles. And we don't get a lot of snow. I mean, in New Mexico we did.
I have never lived anywhere that had a significant winter. I mean, Tennessee was
Dallas,
as close
we
as
had
I got.
Snow. We had snow in Lubbock.
Dallas, we had snow very occasionally, and the whole city would shut down for a day.
It was wonderful,
and then it would go
when
away.
We had it.
Like and when I went to college in Nashville, like we were near the Smoky Mountains, we had a lot of slush and ice and some snow, but that's as close to winter as I've ever really gotten as an adult.
So I'm not going to shut up about it being hot in November. It should not be hot in November, even if you live in Los Angeles. Again, I say this because people have a mistaken idea of what it's really like here.
Right.
It's not the beach the time.
It's not the tropics.
It's not tropical. It's very, very mild and cool most of the time, even in the summertime. We have a few weeks out of every year where it gets hot.
In August.
That's it. And we have, you know, a few months in the winterish months where
you need a jacket.
You need a jacket, you know, and sometimes you might need more than a jacket.
Right.
It'll get down in the 30s, you know, which is compared to people who live in the Northeast where it
gets
really
into the negative 30s.
Or in the, you know, Nebraska tie in to this week's films. You know, obviously that's not very much, but it's cold for a year. And I expect the months between November and, say, March.
Mm-hmm.
Just, could I not sweat
too much? It's not too much.
When I go outside, just standing, can I not sweat? So.
Incidentally,
you tell me to shut up, I'll tell you to shut up right back, harder.
This is a podcast about the cinema.
Yes, it is.
You are Dave White, film critic for Movies.com, and I am Alonzo Duraldi, film critic for TheWrap.com and What the Flick.
I will be taking frequent breaks from this short show to go check on dinner, because we're recording this late in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And it's pre-Thanksgiving here at our house, which means that turkey was on sale. And every time we get a turkey at the holidays, Thanksgiving or Christmas, everybody eats it because all these people come over to our house and eat the food.
Pick the bones clean.
So I'm making a turkey just for us and stuffing and, you know, mashed potatoes.
Yeah.
And,
it's going to be great.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing. And not only will I be checking dinner because it's in the oven right now and I have to keep, like, basting and stuff, but also the show is going to be short. Somebody emailed me or messaged me on Facebook earlier this week and said, I don't accept a linoleum knife under 1 hour in length.
Well, too bad.
And I apologize for when that happens, but you just wait, because December is coming.
Yeah.
And these shows are going to get long in December, because
winter is coming.
They're releasing everything this next month.
It's a super jam-packed Christmas
season. There are weeks where, like, 10 things come out.
Mm-hmm.
Ten things.
I know.
Yeah.
Whereas this week we're stretching to three.
We have two things.
Three.
Two and a half. Two and two halves.
Three.
What?
12, 12, 12.
Oh, yeah. 12, 12, 12. That's not really a movie.
Well, is it really? It's in theaters, so talk about we're counting it. Well, hang on. Before we get there,
I want to go check the levels.
You go check. I wanted to first give a shout-out to our dear friend Kim for the music this week. She made me a tape, I don't even know how long ago, called The Holly Jolly Mix of awesome Christmas jazz and Elvis and things. And so that's where that came from. But I was thinking about the larger phenomenon of how Christmas music has now expanded to include any song about winter.
Right.
You know, I've Got My Love to Keep Me Warm, yes. and Baby It's Cold Outside, yes. and Let It Snow. These yes. are not Christmas specific, but they have entered the canon of Christmas carols.
Yeah.
So I have expanded my, I think that Prokofiev music that they use in Woody Allen's Love and Death that has the jingle bells in it, that should totally be considered Christmas music. Okay. That should go right in with Tchaikovsky.
Sure.
The there's a very pretentious Frank Sinatra album called Tone Poems of Color.
It's, is it really?
Yeah, it's a weird selection in his canon. He conducts the orchestra. All these different composers composed pieces of music that go with different colors. And anyway, the one for white has a very sort of, you know, it's very evocative of snow and stuff.
Is it a good record?
I like a few of the cuts. White's good, red is good, but for the most part, it's like, what are you thinking, Frank Sinatra? I mean, even the liner notes, when you buy the sort of the CD remaster shoe, they talk about, like, what was this? This, you know, I think even they call it pretentious. So.
Like, he was, you know, just like Roger on Mad Men, he tried acid.
Allegedly.
Had a good experience with it.
You don't know that.
I don't know that that's true.
Anyway, but so yeah, so white is now part of my Christmas repertoire.
I know he put a baby in Mia Farrow.
He did. Turns out, yeah. A gay-by even.
Oh, is it a gay?
He's a gay, the Ronan Farrow.
He's a gay. Yeah. Interesting.
I met that kid when he was like 4 years old.
Oh, when she came to the
film festival, film yeah. Festival. She came with the two youngest ones, like the two kids of the Woody years, who right. apparently are not necessarily his
Woody's,
which is just as well, all things considered. But yeah, so go figure. Okay, 12, 12, 12. I will talk about while you go look at kitchen things.
It sounds really boring.
It kind of is. You know,
is it a benefit movie?
I imagine maybe. I think it would have to be.
Then okay, it, then it's fine.
It would be gross for it not to be a benefit.
It gets a pass then if it's a.
Well, I think there are better. You really just give your money to the Robin Hood Foundation, who's the beneficiary of all this stuff.
It's a good idea.
If you
too.
Feel strongly about it, but really, I think you know. Yeah, that would be the better thing. Okay, so a little background. You'll recall last year, Hurricane Sandy hit in late November or late October, I guess, and within weeks they put together this huge benefit at Madison Square Garden, and it was, you know, Paul McCartney and the Rolling Stones and the Who,
Phil Collins and Alison Moyet and Bob Geldof,
no
and
wrong
Run DMC,
wrong charity,
and Spandau Ballet, and
no Kanye West and Billy Joel and Chris Martin and, you know, yada da da da. So, okay, so then they aired this six-hour television event. It was broadcast, I don't know if the major networks carried it, but it was on a lot of the cable channels, and, you know, it was out there in the world. And then they put out, I think, a CD, DVD of it a few months later, and I looked on Amazon, and all these reviews complained about how it was very truncated, and they left out a lot of the really good stuff from it, and, you know, because of rights issues or whatever, and so now we get this movie a year later called 12-12-12, and so there was an interview with the director on therap.com, and he was talking about how he didn't want it to be misery porn. He didn't want it to just be a bunch of, you know, footage of flooding and blah, blah. I'm like, okay, fine. That's an approach. But then what are you doing with this movie? Because you're making a concert film of a concert that already aired on TV, and it's a trim 90 or 100 minutes of a six-hour concert. So once again, you're leaving out tons of stuff. You're not even letting songs play to completion. I mean, Bruce Springsteen's songs, you get snippets of, you know, they don't let them play all the way through. The only you get to hear all of you know, whatever I think it's Jumpin' Jack Flash, whatever the Stones play. You get to hear all the Paul McCartney songs because coincidentally, he's an executive producer of the film. But you get bits of everybody else. You get bits of Gold Digger, and you get bits of My City in Ruins, and whatever else. And then there's some backstage footage, and the stuff that wasn't on TV is admittedly interesting, and you could have made more out of that, I think. You know, you get things like, you know, Tony Danza, who was, you know, it was one of those deals where, it's a celeb, so all the celebrities are phone banking on TV, although, you know, there's a, like, 40 people backstage doing the real grunt work, I'm sure, for that kind of thing. Tony Danza, they ask him about, you know, well, you know, you're getting calls from other parts of the country, and are you surprised that, you know, people out west are this being the supportive of New York and New Jersey? And he gives this really eloquent answer where he cites E Pluribus Unum as, you know, how the country kind of pulls together and blah, blah, blah. You know, there's a great bit where McCartney is headed to the stage and he's singing Hey, Hey, We're the Monkeys, which is like a cultural semiotic implosion moment.
And Joan Baez comes out and says, Children of the 80s, this is your Woodstock.
No.
Billy Ocean was there.
No.
Sade.
No.
REO Speedwagon.
No.
Bryan Adams.
No.
Simple Minds.
Stop it. You haven't even seen this movie. But there's just not
the
enough.
Cars.
Stop it. There's not enough of anything in all this. Like, there's if you're going because you want to see the music again, they really kind of give you bits and dribs and drabs of that. If you wanted sort of a deeper look at, you know, the Sandy disaster, you get some footage of that. There's a cool thing where Billy Joel sings that I've Seen the Lights Go Out on Broadway song over footage of the flooding. And it's cool and it's creepy because that's a song about the apocalypse and about New York being washed out to sea.
Right.
You know, but there aren't enough of anything to make this as interesting as it should be. There's a lot of Harvey Weinstein. A lot.
Well, he's...
Of Harvey Weinstein.
He's
making calls and in meetings and backstage.
He's organizing things.
Yeah, and it's like, that's great.
He's heroically organizing.
Clearly, yes.
Phone calls, car services.
I would admire your philanthropy more if you weren't telling me so often how philanthropic you are and how, you know, it's like, here I am doing this, you know. So, you know, and
follow me with that camera.
The music.
I'll show you how things get done.
The music itself is pretty white bread. It's like I've been calling it laundromat music. You know, it's the stuff that you hear on like the classic hits radio.
104.
101. Yeah. So, generally, I mean, yeah, and here's the thing. It's a year later, and you had this huge concert at Madison Square Garden that raised umpteen million dollars for this thing called the Robin Hood Foundation. Give us a success story.
Yeah,
talk to somebody who got help.
I'd like
helps.
To know what. Tell me, yeah.
What did they do with these untold millions? You
Oprah,
know,
Oprah's real good at that.
Exactly. Where,
she
give me,
was anyway.
Give me some follow up here. So yeah, I'm very disappointed by this movie. If you feel strongly about Sandy relief and you want to help out the Robin Hood Foundation, go to the Robin Hood Foundation website and give them a donation. Do not sit through this movie because it's kind of meh.
Or give to the one that just happened in the Philippines.
Yeah, totally. CARE, the Red Cross. A lot of those guys are doing direct typhoon relief. You can text, I think, Typhoon to the Red Cross and give them a donation. You know, go to their websites; they'll tell you how to do it. But yeah, this movie as a concert film and as a movie about this, you know, disaster, it's just not interesting. Meh. That's it. That's all I got.
Nebraska.
Nebraska is great.
It is great.
Why don't you talk about what it's about?
Well, Bruce Dern is a career drunk.
Right.
With a long-suffering wife and equally long-suffering sons, played by Will Forte and Bob Odenkirk. And his wife is played by a character actress that you have never heard of, named June Squibb.
And the Oscar campaign begins here.
Yeah, pretty much. he is now an old man. He's, you know, sort of lost in his own head. Basically, you know, old age dementia meeting alcoholic dementia.
Right.
At the same time. He doesn't, you know where he is. Sometimes he thinks things that are true are not true. Things that are not true are true, such
right.
as a letter he has received that tells him that he has won $1 million.
In a sweepstakes.
And in a sweepstakes, which he has not. And he insists on walking from Montana,
Billings, Montana,
to
Lincoln, Nebraska,
to claim his prize money. He
because no one
will not
take
be
him.
Deterred from this task.
Right.
Will Forte decides to humor him and say, and take the weekend off and say, "All right, I'll drive you."
And
Will, I will show you that there's nothing happening.
Right. And Will Forte has also just been dumped by his girlfriend, who, you know, she's basically like, let's get married, let's break up, let's do something.
Yeah.
So he's in his own stasis and uses this as an opportunity to get out of town for a bit and have some travel bonding time.
They drive through Bruce Dern's hometown. where word has gotten out, mostly because of him. Everyone now thinks he's a millionaire. That he's a millionaire. So all these terrible people that he knew.
Friends and family.
When he was young, they all want a piece of the action.
Right.
Even though there isn't a thing. There's no action. And things happen. I won't say what happens after that. Because even though this film is not about big reveals or plot, you know,
turns. It's not even really a road trip comedy necessarily.
It is...
It's about
a families. Movie that works best when you don't expect things. Because in my review on movies.com, I say that there's a lot of indie film red flags presented at the get-go of this film. A road trip.
Right.
Familial estrangement.
Black and white.
It's a black and white film. It is from Alexander Payne, who is, you know, the king of this sort of thing now, anyway.
He's one of our great, I would say, one of the great humanist directors of this generation.
Great American, you know, contemporary directors.
Right, but I mean specifically, I think, really tells these sort of small-scale stories about people and about relationships and family and about, you know.
I agree. And so... But you've seen enough of these indie movies to know that there's going to be some sort of, like, huggy bits, you know, at the end. You know, precious feelings are going to come around sooner or later. And I'm really, really happy to announce that this is Alexander Payne's most astringent film to date. The things that you think you're going to get...
I don't know that it's more astringent than Election.
Election...
That movie has a black heart,
Election
which I love.
Election is caustic.
Yeah.
This is not caustic. This is humane, but it is also not mushy. It's not schmoopy.
No, definitely not.
And there are some, you know...
It is emotionally minimal.
There are emotions happening,
yes,
but they are not
grandiose.
Grandiose. Thank you for the word. And so it opened on four screens this week, and then one of them was in Nebraska.
Yes.
So,
which is where he's always been kind of based. I mean,
not
every film, but certainly the early ones. You know, I'm not sure. I've still never seen Citizen Ruth. I need to see Citizen Ruth.
The performances are very surprising, really. Yeah. Bruce Dern does very little in the film.
It's a very reactive.
He's very reactive, but he's great. And Will Forte is very surprising in that, you know, his comedic. You know what? I tell you, all these comic actors who then do serious things. They often, you know, people often say, oh, I'm so surprised by that. But I really do think that if you can do comedy, then you can probably do dramatic stuff, too.
Yeah, I mean, one of the basics of improv...
Comedy's harder, anyway.
Totally. But one of the basics of improv is listening, you know, and responding. And he really just does a lot of listening and a lot of letting other people kind of get the big moment, you know. No, he's terrific in this, as is Bob Odenkirk, which isn't a surprise if you've seen him on, you know, Breaking Bad and other stuff that he's been, you know, he had a wonderful turn, I thought, in Spectacular Now as the boss of the drunk teenager. But yeah, June Squibb, learn that name. She is so great in this.
I think she's terrific. I've read a few reviews, though, that have sort of taken the film to task because of her.
What?
That she provides moments of relief that the film shouldn't be giving us. Because she's the comedy.
Yeah.
She is the comedy in this movie. And she steals every scene she's in.
Yeah.
Says crazy things. Does, you know, sort of outlandish stuff.
But never in an inorganic way, I don't think.
No. It works in the context of the movie, I think. I don't think it does. I think it does provide a bit of relief, but I also don't think that it...
It doesn't clang.
It doesn't clang around. Now, here's some other negative things I've read about it. That it's condescending overall.
Oh, come
toward
on.
its world, you know, working class Midwestern folks. And once again, you know,
I defer to you on this.
Ask the person who grew up amongst this sort of, you know, group of people. No, it's not condescending. This is real. This is about as real as it gets. You know,
there's a great
it's
scene.
It's not
where,
gummo,
right?
But it's also not. You know, it's decidedly down market. You know, the characters.
Like there's a scene where Dern's family gets together, and it's something like six or seven brothers. And it basically all boils down to all of them sitting in the living room and watching a football game
and not
talking to each other.
Yeah.
Except occasionally one of them will ask a question about somebody else's car.
Yeah.
Do you still have that Buick?
I really don't feel like for you to call this film condescending is really to accuse Alexander Payne of
mockery.
And I guarantee you that's not where he's at.
He's too empathetic a filmmaker, and there was, I mean, I don't have as much firsthand exposure to these types as you do, but it never felt condescending. It never felt like he was going for an easy laugh. It felt honest. It felt like this was what you would get from people like
that. And really, my question is, at what point is a character rich and sophisticated enough for you to be able to laugh at them?
Right. Yeah.
If they do something silly, why isn't that funny? If they're working class or undereducated or poor, if they do something silly, why isn't that funny?
Yeah.
It is funny. It's funny when they do it. It's funny when rich, sophisticated people do it.
Sure.
It doesn't matter. So, yeah, I think this is a terrific movie. It's going to open wider and wider as the month rolls on. I assume that this coming Friday it'll expand to more places.
I would imagine, and certainly between now and the end of the year, it will be opening in a lot more places. Uh-huh. So keep a lookout for Nebraska when it gets to you. It is one of the best movies this year, for sure.
Best Man Holiday.
The first of three African-American cast Christmas movies that will be hitting theaters between now and the end of the year.
And it kicked Thor's ass this week.
Well, it wound up coming in second, but it did.
It did?
Yeah, but it won Friday.
Oh, I thought it was the number one movie of the weekend.
No, number two.
Oh, well,
but Thor's, right. Thor's got all
you
that.
You didn't read the article to me properly.
No, you weren't listening, right?
I was listening.
No.
I was.
Your ears were full of sage and thyme. although, you know, Thor has a lot of IMAX and 3D. I said it had the top per screen average of the weekend.
Oh, did it?
Yes.
Oh, well, then it wins.
Sure.
Yeah. It's not good.
Yeah, it's not. And
it's not a good movie.
You're more forgiving of it than I am, but even I am willing to say that for all the things that bug me about it, there's something about Christmas movies that if they hit you the right way and you forgive them and love them anyway, then you will love them forever.
Yep.
I mean, you know, we always talk about Love Actually. And
also not a good film.
Yeah, I know totally what's wrong with that movie, but I want to see it every year anyway.
Me too.
You know, and in researching my book, Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas.
Which is for sale.
From us or elsewhere. God, go back and read the original reviews of White Christmas or Christmas in Connecticut. They're vicious.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's like it's...
Have you watched White Christmas lately? We have. It's dumb.
It is full of hoax.
And I can't get enough. I can't get enough of Love Actually.
Mm-hmm.
I can't get enough of, like, pretty much any half-assed Christmas movie.
Look, I wrote a book on this.
I like
them. I'm clearly a sucker for this stuff.
So, when I say that Best Man Holiday is not good, and then you go to my review at movies.com and you see that I have given it 3 stars, that is the 3 stars of enjoyment that I experienced while watching it.
And I probably would have enjoyed it more if I'd seen
funny.
It with you.
It's a funny movie. It's all over the place.
Yeah.
It's got so much stuff going on. It's got so many wrong-headed...
weird sexist notions and, you know, like, bizarre behavior combined with a sort of Christian-y undertone.
Yeah. So much, like, humping and mother effing language, and then people saying things like, well, I'm just going to go pray on this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, wait a second.
Out of nowhere, synchronized lip sync numbers. And
I know some really, 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 really strict
pray on it people.
Christ followers.
Yes.
They don't go humping around and using the 12 letter swears. I'm not going to judge this particular group of movie friends for right. doing that very same thing, but I'm confused by this.
I will judge,
and I think rightly.
I will judge writer director Malcolm D. Lee in this movie and in its 1999 predecessor. So yes, we had to wait 14 years for a sequel. There's this weird thing where, like, women are so much more harshly judged for their sexual pasts than men are. And it's not even in a way where it's about that. I think he just does it and doesn't even know that he's doing it.
Speaking of not knowing what we're doing.
Yes.
We haven't told people what this film is about or where it comes from or what it's a sequel to. We've jumped right into yelling about it.
Okay, fine. All right, so it's a sequel to 1999's The Best Man, which was which opened at number one. It was a sleeper hit at the time, with a very attractive ensemble cast, a lot of whom were just getting started. Taye Diggs and Morris Chestnut and Nia Long and Harold Perrineau and Regina Hall and Terrence Howard, and you know, it was an innocuous enough, charming enough movie the first go around. So this time around, it's 14 years later, and Taye Diggs, you know, who in the first movie was just about to put out his first novel, which was going to be an Oprah book. You know, it was a big success, but he hasn't really done anything since then, and he just lost his teaching job at NYU, and so he really needs to come up with another book that's going to do well. And it turns out his BFF from college, Morris Chestnut, is about to retire from the NFL, and who quite possibly is going to break the NFL rushing record in a game on Christmas Day. So there's a possibility that maybe he'll try and ghostwrite his memoir as a way to save his flagging literary career. Meanwhile, Taye Diggs' wife, Sanaa Lathan, who is a chef, is in like the last weeks of her pregnancy, which they've been wanting to have happen for a long time. Harold Perrineau and his ex-stripper wife are running this private school in New York, but one of their major donors saw some YouTube video where she was being a hoe in granny panties, and so now
she used to be a stripper.
But apparently, in the movie,
according to this video scandal,
one time
she was a prostitution whore.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then Harold Perrineau's annoying ex-girlfriend is now one of the Real Housewives of Westchester. Terrence Howard is now like a brand manager. Anyway, they all get together because Morris Chestnut's wife, played by
Monica Calhoun.
Monica Calhoun.
Who's been in everything.
Wants everybody to...
Baghdad Cafe.
Yeah, she's been around.
Yeah.
Wants everybody to get together for the holidays. And, you know, old rivalries surface and there's tons of misunderstandings. This movie has more like people walking in on the wrong part of a conversation. Nia Long works at MSNBC and her boyfriend is white. Anyway, you know, or people are picking up the wrong phone or the wrong iPad or, you know, whatever. And, of course, it's a Christmas movie where everybody's getting together for the first time in a long time. So naturally, someone is going to die.
Okay, so that's everything that's wrong.
With it. Well, I was trying to figure out, like, why is this movie so long and convoluted? Well, part of the problem is there's something like 10 major characters.
Yes. Yeah.
Who you've seen on the posters looking like a Gap ad. Gap with ad their red some scarves.
Really nice red scarves. Mm,
not as nice as my red scarf that you gave me.
That's true. That's a fact.
Yes.
That's the king of scarves.
Mm-hmm.
I spent a lot of moolah on that thing back when there was money.
Moolah to be spent.
Back when there was money going around in this journalism.
Gig.
Yeah. If I knew then what I know now,
I would have saved it.
I'd have gone to Target for that thing. Went to Barney's like a fool.
And I will cherish it forever.
Yeah, you will. better be nice to it. Pet it, clean it gently.
I fold it very nicely and put it in the drawer with the cedar blocks. Mm-hmm. Not to worry.
Sometimes it gets cold enough to wear a scarf, which is great because you're going to have it for the rest of your life.
And
when you go to Sundance.
Sundance, I always rock it at Sundance.
People admire it at Sundance. Yeah.
I do.
So here's what's good. there's a moment where out of the blue, out of nowhere, all the guys dress up in matching outfits and do a choreographed dance number lip-syncing to New Edition's Can You Stand the Rain?
Mm-hmm.
Can You Stand the Rain is such a good song. It's so good. And, you're like, Gary Cotty's next to me, he's singing along to
the song. At full volume.
At the press screening. Yeah, kind of at full volume. When it was over, he started singing This Christmas at full volume, and I told him to shut up. And the individual performances are great, and the cast is really good together.
Yeah, when the movie shuts up and lets them just hang out and be, it's a lot more fun than when there's plot twists.
You can feel it sort of being, off the cuff and maybe even sort of improvised, these conversations that they're having. They're relaxed and they're joking around with each other, which suggests that they really have known each other all these years.
Right.
And it probably doesn't hurt that all these actors have known each other all these years.
Sure.
They were in a film together 14 years ago. They all sort of have come up in the past 14 years as actors, in Hollywood, a place where black actors and actresses are routinely sort of overlooked for most everything outside of black film.
And that was the first Best Man was one of the movies like American Graffiti, where you hadn't heard of them going into that movie, within a few years, like a lot of them had become a really big deal. Like that was Terrence Howard's, one of his very first films.
Yeah. Everyone in that movie is reasonably famous now.
Yeah.
The two of the women are sort of not, but but they've worked consistently.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
That was Terrence Howard pre-Glitter. That's what I'm saying.
Pre-Glitter, pre-Baby Wipes, pre-everything.
Pre-Hustle and Flow.
Pre-Hustle and Flow.
Definitely pre-Baby Wipes.
He's really funny in this film.
I wish he got to be funnier more often.
Yeah.
Because he gives me, he's very good at giving me the creeps when he's supposed to give me the creeps. Does he give me the creeps. But when he's funny, he's funny.
Yeah. Who else? I was yelling the name Regina Hall from The Kitchen.
Yes.
Boy, do I have a crush on Regina Hall. And I have for years. Like, ever since...
Scary Movie.
Best Man or Scary Movie, early on. I guess it was Scary Movie.
Yeah.
When I first saw her. And I was like, who is this girl? Like, I've loved her from that moment. And in this film, she has a moment where she gets to do the thing she's best at, which is screech at people. I'm in heaven when she's yelling at someone. And so I'm watching this film in the press screening, realizing objectively from writing and directing and putting the camera in the right place, sort of, perspective. It's not great.
No. But there are moments, like you said.
But it's incredibly sentimental. It leads up to a climax that's meant to move you, and it kind of does.
I found it's for all four endings kind of too much.
I liked...
I love the scene where...
The singing at the end where the thing...
Well, yeah, that's always...
Yeah, it's...
Where Taye Diggs goes to his agent, who's played by John Michael Higgins, who says, your first book was smart, and not just black smart.
Right.
I got a big laugh in my audience. One thing that cracks me up about this movie is... this is clearly one of those Christmas movies, and it's set in like New Jersey, I think, so it's supposed to be cold and snow or whatever, where they clearly filmed it in the spring or summer because
in Canada.
Well, maybe that too, but like everybody is wearing, their coats and their gloves and their scarves, but you can't see anybody's breath.
No.
There's no snow on the ground anywhere. There's a line somewhere
about... There's some fake snow in front of the house.
Occasionally, yeah. But like somebody makes a joke about, the caterer slipped on some ice. I'm like, at a skating rink? Like, what? What are we talking about here? So yeah, it's a movie with problems, but if you wind up loving it and you love it forever, I would totally understand why.
Right. Yeah.
But so we still got Black Nativity and Medea Christmas.
Medea Christmas. But I'll tell you, I know Black Nativity is going to be pretty good because I think Casey Lemons is so cool.
Oh, she's an amazing filmmaker.
And she barely gets to work, it seems, sometimes. But she made Eve's Bayou. She made The Caveman's Valentine, which is a weird, weird film But that I really sort of liked.
I need to see that one. But I loved Eve's Bayou. And this is based on a Langston Hughes play. Yeah. It's a musical.
So I'm excited about it. It's got Mary J. Blige. That's mm-hmm. all I care about.
As a friend of mine who has seen the film told me, Forrest Whitaker can sing. So I take his word for it.
I'm excited about Black Nativity, but I'm not worried for Black Nativity.
Sure.
I'm worried for Madea Christmas. It could go either way. It could go either way because I'm a huge fan of Madea. But Madea isn't always Madea. Madea is at the mercy of her creator, and her creator doesn't seem to want to be Madea anymore.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised the movie even exists because witness protection felt so
witness
like
witness protection is so terrible
and so
it
like
made me, it made me want to rethink my adoration of this ridiculous character.
You can feel Tyler Perry resenting having to put on the fat suit and the house coat again, and so it's like wow again. And my joke when we first saw the ads was like, oh look, it's Alex Cross didn't do well the movie.
Yeah, well there's an energy to the trailer, and the print campaign is really good.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping.
Fingers crossed.
I'm just hoping because I really want this to be like Ernest level quality. You know what I mean? Like Ernest Saves Christmas.
Right.
That's what it needs to be.
Totally.
It needs to be Madea Saves Christmas.
I watched the Madea Christmas play.
Yeah.
But I suspect the movie will have little, if anything, to do with it. So we'll see.
Well, who knows?
But yeah. Wow, that's it? That's all?
That's it. I saw The Wind Rises.
Yes, you did.
Oh, but I'm not going to review it until it's officially released.
Okay.
It was released in New York and Los Angeles for 1 week
for Academy qualifying
run. And but I didn't get to see it in time. And then by the time I saw it, the run was half over. And I thought,
No, that's fine.
I'll write the review for movies.com.
But just give us a short.
In January, February when it comes. It's magnificent. It's so beautiful. It's, you know. Every frame is gorgeous. Mm. It's intelligent and quiet and sensitive and, you know, about complex issues. You know, is the purity of my industrial design?
Are my flush rivets?
Are they going to be used to slaughter, you know, entire thousands and thousands of people.
Yeah, I can't remember a movie that I've ever seen that was so much about engineering as an art form.
Yeah.
You know, and it really is. And you know, Miyazaki has always had a thing about flying, and so to see this him make a biopic about an aircraft designer whom clearly he has always admired and been a fan of, it just works so well. And, oh... Whoa, that'll teach me to assume.
What?
I thought that it was another score by Joe Hisaishi, who is Miyazaki's frequent collaborator and composer, but it was not. So I'm going to see who did the music, because I thought the score was lovely.
Did you...
I might have.
Did you get it wrong in your review?
Oh, no. Sorry, it is Joe Hisaishi. It's weird. It's not on Hisaishi's IMDb
page. Why are you being dumb on the microphone?
But it's IMDb's fault.
Be dumb on your own time.
It's IMDb's fault. It's not my... Okay, anyway.
Blame the computer.
I was right originally. Joe Hisaishi, who does such beautiful music for Miyazaki movies. I mean, even Howl's Moving Castle, which is not a movie that I think completely works, but oh my God, that score! It's one of the few. I'm not one of those soundtracky people that has a ton of them in my iTunes, but I love that.
You're a liar.
No, I don't. I mean, I have more than you, but
I got a lot of them in the car. I know that.
Yes, but I in general, I'd say I believe me, dude, we know people who are
yeah.
hardcore.
One of them James, is what's up, James
Caricino. I wasn't gonna name check him, but yeah, he's like we
name checked you.
I pale next to his, you know, knowledge and interest and whatnot. So anyway, but yeah, but the Howl's Moving Castle score, one of my total favorites. So, all right, what's your DVD? My DVD pick is This Christmas, which I think is kind of the movie that blazed the trail of Best Man Holiday and all these other movies. I think people kind of realized, oh, wow, there really aren't a lot of Christmas films aimed at an African-American audience. We have all these media outlets for African-Americans now. There's, you know, when I was looking to see The Best Man on cable to get caught up for this movie, like there's... It's not just BET. There's like a ton of channels out there that are like really rocking the black programming and going after that audience. So
right.
So this is clearly they've realized, oh, underserved niche. But the movie that really kicked that off was This Christmas, which came out in 2007.
2008. Before Chris Brown turned into Chris Brown.
Yes. Before, yes. That's the
when
one.
When he was a kid and he was sweet and he was singing R&B and Oprah was having him on her show and saying, oh, what a nice boy you are.
Exactly.
That was back in the day.
So yeah, before that worm turned. That's the one thing that I think people may find difficult to watch in that movie is that Chris Brown is.
But no, you won't have difficulty watching it because he's a kid in the movie.
That's true.
He's a kid.
Yeah, and he's very good. And it's another like Best Man Holiday.
He hasn't lost his mind yet.
Exactly. But a terrific ensemble cast, very funny people, and, you know, beautifully shot and smart and really captures. I love how much the movie is built around the meals. Because that's what holiday, when your family gets together for holidays, that's what happens. You know, it's all about that. And so it's all about who's cooking this and when are we going to have ready and blah, blah, blah. These amazing overhead shots of the table and stuff. And, you know, Idris Elba is in it and Laz Alonso and
Loretta Devine
and
Lauren London.
Lauren London. No, but
I'm digging her.
Regina King, right? Not Regina Hall.
Regina King has the best moment in the whole movie. You're not going to spoil it,
yeah.
But you'll know it when it happens.
It's one of the great moments of spousal revenge ever. So yeah, This Christmas is my pick. What's yours?
Well, I think I said this a few weeks ago. I don't know. I can't remember now if I recommended it already a few weeks ago. I'd have to go back and look. But if I didn't, then I'm going to say it, and if I did, then this is just a repeat, and I'm a copycatter of myself. But Alexander Sokurov's Russian Ark is now out on Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm.
It got a quick theatrical release in New York, like on one screen. It didn't even come here. I was so mad. Not happy about that.
Well, you mean like a reissue?
A reissue, yeah. Now it's on Blu-ray. It's a real-time tour. What do you mean, no?
Well, it's real time in that it's one take, but over the course of that
one take.
But what? But how much? It's not how much history elapses over the course of the film.
I don't remember.
Centuries, right?
Yes, it's not a real time history.
Well, that's movie. I just wanted to be clear about that.
All right, it's a one take shot. One take. It is a one take movie through St. Petersburg's Hermitage Museum, all through Russian history. And it's magnificent in a way. Like, it will blow your mind visually. It will blow your mind all the ways that your mind can be blown. I'm in love with this film.
And they got it, what, on the fourth go-round?
Third take. And this, like, thousands of people and choreographed and symphonies playing and ballroom scenes and everyone just waiting and ready for the camera to move through their section of the museum to begin doing their thing. Mm-hmm. Insane. It's so perfect. So there you go.
Letters.
Here's the first one. It's from Bruce. Listening to the latest episode now, he says, sit through the credits because there are two servings of blank. Shawarmas? What word did you say?
I thought this had gotten into general use, but maybe not. Shawarma is the term that a lot of people use.
Spell it, Alonzo.
Shawarma.
Yeah.
It is an Arab dish. It's a style of serving meat. And if you live in a large city, you've probably seen places with big signs in the window that say shawarma. And there's a joke in the Avengers when they're having the big battle against the aliens where Iron Man talks about it. He goes, let's wrap this up and I want to go get shawarma. I see this sign for shawarma and it looks really good. And then at the last minute apparently they didn't even shoot this until the actual press tour of the movie when the whole cast got back together again. They shot a scene that was added at the end of the credits where the all Avengers sit around the table eating shawarma and nobody talked, but they're just eating it and enjoying it. I think Chris Evans had grown a beard for his next movie, so he's got like a napkin over half of his face.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I remember that.
So it's one of those things like nuking the fridge, you know, where people it entered into the lexicon. So now people talk about those little buttons or those little post-credits, little add-ons. Like all the X-Men movies now have them, and a lot of other films too. People will say shawarma. So our joke is, you know, stay through the credits, they're shawarma.
His next question. He has two questions. Has there ever been a movie that likened extreme evangelical religious belief and proselytizing to a viral infection, perhaps even a zombie-like plague?
I never saw Wreck. But isn't there some weirdly religious undertone about that movie?
There is, but it's not about...
But not, not doesn't no. equate the two?
No.
You're the horror and the religion guy, so you tell me.
I don't know that I've seen a film that drew that parallel. You know, that...
Yeah, I mean, there's like Invasion of the Body Snatchers, there's an idea of sort of conformity.
And there's a reason for this. It's because mainstream film doesn't like to deal with religion.
Yeah.
Except in a very, you know, comedic way or...
blandly uplifting.
Or sort of, yeah. And then what you have is, like, they don't want to go there. Mm-hmm. And then what you also then have is a subset of Christian films,
right,
made by evangelical churches and self, you know, distributed, that wind up in, on, you know, 200, 300, 400, 500 screens.
The Kirk Cameron films.
The Kirk Cameron movies. I'm in Love with a Church Girl. I was saying
movies that are executive produced by God.
Yeah. Those kind of movies, well, they're not going to, I mean, because that's, their bread and butter is...
Join us.
Join us. And so... It's
a cool idea.
Yeah, it is, because it's real.
Yeah.
It's very true.
I mean, you know, we talked about going to see Ticket to Heaven at the Cinefamily, and you know, there were in the early 80s, I think, when the Moonies thing was popular, and you were hearing stories about how people got into it and how they got out of it. You know, there was Ticket to Heaven, there was Blinded by the Light, which was that crazy TV movie with Jimmy and Christy McNichol, and then there's the one with Michael O'Keefe and Peter Fonda, whose name I'm now forgetting. But those in a way were kind of these horror movies where, you know, seemingly ordinary teens suddenly become these kind of glassy-eyed zombies, and they have to be rescued and deprogrammed, you know, to get them back into normal life. And it would be, I'm surprised, if this is a horror movie and we just don't know about it, write us at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com and tell us all about it, because we think it's a cool idea, but we can't think of any movies offhand that actually have done that.
Okay, so I've got one more letter before we begin telling everybody about things.
Okay, because we have several letters floating around.
We do. Okay. There's a little bit of a backlog. Don't worry, it's all coming out.
Okay, just want to make sure our letter writers know that.
Next one is from...
Split Image.
Which one was that?
The Michael O'Keefe, Peter Fonda cult movie. Sorry.
The next one is from our listener, Julian, who has written the show a couple times.
Yes.
And I like Julian because he calls us Mr. Duralde and Mr. White.
So formal.
He's got his own blog. It's called the Cinema Touch.
Yes. Not to be confused with the Cheese Touch.
It's Julian from the Cinema Touch again. I hope my constant questions aren't an exasperation for you, because guess what? I have another.
Bring it.
I was wondering, you two never knifed the Sight and Sound poll back in August of last year.
Oh, yeah. We kept talking about it.
I'm sure all of your wonderful listeners would love you too. I would also love to know your thoughts on a list like this even existing, and whether its prominence is defensible.
Well, addressing the second question, I have no problem with it. It's a question of, you know, how much credence you want to give it or how much import.
He says, for your convenience, the listener's convenience, here is the top 10.
Okay. Well, before we get into that.
The Sight and Sound top 10.
Right. But do you want
to... So people know what
I understand that. But before we get into the specifics of that, he's asking also generally, what do we think of the existence of said list? I think it's fine.
But here's the thing. Do we want to knife this list? Well, here we go. They're all good.
Okay, I was answering the second question first, and then we were going to get into the first question, but fine, we'll knife the list.
8.5, The Passion of Joan of Arc, Man with a Movie Camera, The Searchers, 2001, Sunrise, Rules of the Game, Tokyo Story, Citizen Kane, Vertigo. All of them great.
Yeah, 100% knife. I mean, you know, not the 10 I would pick necessarily, but I can't really quibble.
True, Sleepaway Camp is not on this list.
Right, and Vertigo is, but no, and... There's nothing in there that I find so horribly objectionable that I would not give it 100%.
I think lists are fine because what they do is they make people talk.
Yeah. They make people talk about movies that they haven't seen.
Yeah. They make you go, oh, I don't know what Tokyo Story is. What's that? And yeah. then you look at it and you think, oh, there's this guy named Ozu and he's made a million movies. I'll go watch some more of those because I really did like that Tokyo Story.
I had we were talking about the death of Blockbuster, and I posted the Critic Wire survey where they had asked a bunch of us about, you know, what our video store memories were, you know, from big stores or mom and pops or whatever. And somebody, I think Pyro, who listens to the show, posted about how when the AFI, the original AFI 100 list came out, that they put it up in the store, and that I think staff members would put dots on the ones they had seen, and then it actually encouraged people who worked there to see other movies they hadn't seen, so they could have more dots on the poster. And, you know, yeah, I think anything that kind of, you know, nudges people to, hey, you should maybe check this out because this august panel of people say so.
August.
You know, I'm fine with that. You know, that's certainly why, you know, my both of my books are lists of one sort or other, and yeah, the idea is to encourage people to see them, and you know, you read a little about it, you figure, hey, this guy says it's like I need to see it, then maybe you will. I don't know.
Speaking of books about movies that you should read, Alonzo Duralde has a book. It's called Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas. And here's the thing, we're offering it for sale directly from us. Like, you could go to Amazon.
And you can get it as a Kindle or as an iBook.
Yeah, you can go to Amazon and get it as a Kindle. You can get it for like $12, $13 on Amazon,
something like that. And
is under the retail price.
iTunes has it.
Or you could get the special edition directly from us, which includes Alonzo Duralde's autograph and a special message personally to you
or the person that you're giving it to.
Christmas little papery bits and things tucked into the book. We're gonna wrap it up in gift wrap for you and all that stuff. That's gonna cost you $20,
but including totally postage worth it. Within the United States.
Outside of the United States, it's gonna cost you more than $20 because you live too far away from the post office.
But, yeah, so we appreciate your support. If you would like a copy or more copies, drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com, and we'll tell you all about how to get them.
Super love your money.
And the sooner you order, the longer before Christmas you'll get them. And if it's not a gift and it's for you, you should get it well before Christmas to give yourself time to pick out all these awesome new movies of the Christmas season that you want to watch.
Also, we're taking pre-orders for Linoleum Knife t-shirts.
Yes, very chic white letters on black shirts.
Go to linoleum-knife.com, which is our website, that has which hosts this podcast and also has original content by us that is not the stuff that you would read on movies.com or the Wrap.
And links to material we've written elsewhere.
Links to stuff we've done elsewhere. You will see that t-shirt designed by our friend, filmmaker and book editor Graham Colbeans.
Mm-hmm.
And it, too, is $20. We're taking pre-orders right now. And then when we get enough pre-orders, we're gonna
make them and ship them.
We're going to ship them to you. So, that's it. That's stuff for you to buy. It's the season to buy things.
That's right. Keep America's economy strong.
Tell them what podcast to listen to because we're leaving and I'm going to go finish making dinner.
As always, we urge you to check out our friends in the podcast universe. Check out ChristyLemire.com. Go to SiriusXM to hear Matt Achety and Gray Drake on Rotten Tomatoes Radio. Check out the Frank Nicaro Show and Derek and Romaine. Also, on the podcast tip, there is the Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Triple
A. The podcast tip. You are at Live Aid right now.
That's right. Throwing Shade, Team Jack, The Schmoes Know, The B-Movies Podcast, Film Spotting SVU, Podcrash, The Game Night Guys, Secretly Timid, and The Lunch. You can subscribe to the show for free at iTunes and leave us a review there, which several of you have, and we appreciate it.
But only a good one.
It helps.
We don't want any other ones.
It helps people find the show. It gives us better placement on their podcast page. You can stream the show at Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com. You can also stream it from an app on our Facebook page, which if you haven't liked it, please go do, Linoleum Knife Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter @LinoleumCast. Check into the show at GetGlue.com. And Drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. I have been asking for people's top 10 Christmas movie lists or worst 10 Christmas movie lists for us tonight on the show.
We've got a couple emails.
We've been getting a couple, and we're going to start reading them more in earnest as we get closer to Christmas. But, you know, write us with any questions or comments, and certainly with your requests for books and T-shirts, we will get you taken care of. We're very excited about these. The T-shirt is the first official Linoleum Knife product, so we are now... purveyors of that. And as always,
merch.
Exactly. As always, we thank you for listening, and we will catch you next time.
Goodbye.